Well, as you can see, the stage is set a little differently this morning. To my left, to your right, is some of the surroundings that we find in a healing touch session. It's not much like a medical setting. Instead of computer and desk and instruments and bright lights, we find something sort of similar to worship or a good dinner party. There's a candle. There is sound, the gong that brought us to inner attention, which is my salad bowl. There were the healing frequencies of music as you walked in. There is scent from healing oils, flowers from nature, and we're already beginning to relax and lower our defenses. So we thought we'd each begin with a brief personal story of an important encounter with the healing presence in our own lives, and then move on to unfold some of the meaning and process of the healing experience in itself. My story comes from my 15th year. I was a lively, enthusiastic teenager when, out of the blue, I just ran out of steam. The diagnosis was nephritis, kidney disease. Probably not fatal, but mild to permanent damage expected, and don't expect any offspring here. Dangerous for mother and child. So I was sort of moping along when we had a visit from one of my mother's old childhood friends. They grew up together in the little village of Lower Hayford, just outside Oxford. Our visitor's name was Anne Mansell. She was a successful, affluent businesswoman from Sydney, Australia. My mom explained to her what was going on with me, and something interesting began to unfold. Anne explained that she'd had a little gift for healing in her younger years that she was really able to develop in her later life, and that she might have something to offer to her old friends, long-distance healing. So she explained it to me this way. She plopped a table lamp on the kitchen table in front of me and asked me what made it work, what made it shine. And I said, well, you plug it in and you turn the switch. And Anne smiled at me and she said, exactly. God is the current. Your intention and mine is the cord. You are the lamp. You're the one who has to turn the switch and hold the image of yourself full of energy, running on that soccer field, happy and full of the life that you usually have. So we decided on a healing experiment. Once a week, for 3 months, I would plug in at 9 o'clock Sunday evenings, which would be 3 p.m. Monday afternoon in Australia. Together, we would hold the intention and vision of my being vitally well again, very steadily, for 15 minutes. I don't know whether I could have made it go longer, but in, you know, my ninth grade mode, that was serious, you know, hands on the wheel, imagining every Sunday night. Well, weeks passed, and I began to feel better. 3 months later, as we had planned, we asked for the full lab workup and went into the doctor's office, where he was perplexed and apologetic. They'd mixed up the lab reports. So he ordered another blood workup, the last thing I wanted to do, and back to his office 2 weeks later, and, I don't know, the same sloppy bookkeeping. So we went to the original kidney specialist who'd had my case from the beginning. He went through everything with a fine-tooth comb. Back to the lab, I felt like a pincushion by the time we finally sat down with him for the final report. The perplexing results were the same. Inexplicably, I had completely recovered. It was impossible, annoying, and medically unexplainable. But I didn't care. I was ready to roll on the field again. And in time, I had two successful pregnancies, one of which produced a pair of twins at nearly 6 pounds each. Clearly, healthy kidneys and an abiding interest in that light. Spiritual healing is different from doctoring. They complement each other. Each is miraculous in its own field. A fulfilled life employs both. both start with symptoms, what feels out of whack, signs of discomfort or disease. But the process of healing begins very differently. Instead of the language of blood pressure, lab numbers, and diagnostics, which are the standards of office visits and clinics, a healing session uses the language of gentle inquiry and prayer. An example of the attitude that invites a healing encounter is found in this lovely poem prayer that we use in our sessions and in our teachings. Gentle me, Holy One, into an unclenched moment, a deep breath, a letting go of heavy experiences, of shriveling anxieties, of dead certainties that, softened by the silence, surrounded by the light, and open to the mystery, I may be found by wholeness, upheld by the unfathomable, entranced by the simple, and filled with the joy that is you. Spiritual healing has its own language set. The words for healing themselves are all clustered around a single linguistic root. There are five of them. Healing, help, hail, wholeness, and holiness. The relationships between holiness and health and healing interest me the most. There are four scriptural passages which, I'm sorry, don't show up well in this slide, but let me read them to you because they use the kind of language full of awareness and feeling that leads to healing. At the top, from Proverbs, a cheerful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones. From Mark, Jesus said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." From Luke, she came up behind him and touched the fringe of his garment, and immediately her discharge of blood ceased. And Jesus said, "Who was it that touched me? For I perceive that power has gone out from me." And from one of John's letters, "Dear friend, I pray that you may enjoy good health and that all may go well with you, even as your soul is getting along well." Well, remember those images of EM fields around our bodies earlier in the sessions? I suspect that that's the phenomenon of Jesus' healing field that the woman tapped into. Artists have been sensitive to subtle beauty and energy and have long used the convention of the halo to describe spiritual energy emanating from those who have awakened. This is one of my favorite frescoes by Giotto. And this wonderful Madonna and Child from the 15th century show very clearly those vivid fields around us. Take a moment to remember what we've been learning in these Thursday sessions. First, we are made of energy, energies that are intelligent and conscious. Jesus' use of those energies was central to his teaching and healing. The continuum of our health runs from molecules and cells to organs, muscles, and bones, and it used to be considered entirely physical and completely separate from our mind and emotions. But we are now understood to be a dynamic network of information in which mind and body are not separate, but must be treated together. Dr. Candace Pert explains that increasing health begins this way. Simply bringing awareness to the process of breathing initiates the release of peptide molecules from the hindbrain to regulate breathing while unifying all systems. It was her discovery that every cell is composed of molecules that carry and are influenced by neuropeptides of emotional energy. Our state of health is affected by what we think and how we feel, by our attitudes, by our intentions, and above all, by our habits of feeling. As our feelings change, the mixture of neuropeptides travels throughout our body and our brain, and they're literally changing the chemistry of every cell in our body. This is the realm where spiritual healing takes place through the agents of awareness, breath, and intention. This is where prayer becomes palpable and powerful if the heart is coherent and stable. This is the territory of healing prayer and healing touch, of the power of visualization and intention when the heart is coherent and stable. Well, next up is Nina Zimmer, who will give us a glimpse of the power of sound and music to shape our outlook and our health.
I assume this is working. Yes, okay. Good. Well, one way you can be sure you're following the will of God is that it will take you where you never meant to go. That's a quote I read some time ago, and I found it to be true. For me, the journey into healing touch has been a bit of a surprise. At a time in life when one's vision is directed backward and not forward into something new. Yet, as I look back, I see that I was being drawn step by step along this path, and how rewarding it has been. I became interested in healing when my granddaughter was born with an interior anomaly. I had studied Reiki, and through her babyhood, I instinctively held and prayed for her. But it was only years later that I heard of an introductory class in Healing Touch Spiritual Ministry. And I went at the suggestion of a friend. In fact, that friend was Candace. It did seem providential when, in a matter of a couple of weeks, my husband had sudden, unexpected open-heart surgery. I was so thankful that I'd been given some new perspectives on the human capacities for healing and some techniques for the laying on of hands. Through the weeks that followed, even the little I had so far learned seemed to comfort him and hasten his recovery, even helping to bring his heart back into rhythm. So I was encouraged. And over the next few years, I took the remaining classes for my certificate, eventually introducing Healing Touch at Trinity, where we offer it twice a month and also on request, as well as offering it as a volunteer in the wellness program at the Cancer Center, which is immensely rewarding, as you might imagine. It's been humbling for me in this work to experience God's care for us as so immediate and intimate, and to see that with loving intention, any of us can learn to be a vessel for healing our fellows. As Linda Smith says, who's the founder of Healing Touch Spiritual Ministry, she says, "I love to see the light go on in people's eyes as they remember at some deep level that they are loved, that God means for them to be healed, and that they in turn can help others toward healing." This work has been a huge gift for me at this point in my life, a way in which to serve, which can use the gifts gained by maturity to contribute something to God's work in the world. Oh, just a postscript. That granddaughter is all grown up now and studying healing touch for animals. The first thing we learn in healing touch classes is the importance of being completely present in the moment. Becoming mindfully collected in our own beings, and then coming into coherence with spirit. Intending that alignment with the divine, knowing that is always present around and within us, enabling us to bring a vibrant and peaceful field through which the divine can send healing and another can come into resonance. This coherence can be promoted by sensory energies, hence the smells and bells long employed by religions of all sorts. Think of candles, incense, drums, bowls. Chief among these is music, which we almost always use in healing sessions. And here about that is an illustrative story. Don Campbell is known internationally as a teacher and researcher in the fields of music and sound, the author of the Mozart Effect, as you heard. He tells this classic story about the benefits of chanting. A medical doctor, Dr. Alfred Tomatis, was asked to bring his expertise into a Benedictine monastery in the southern part of France. Most of the monks were feeling very tired. There was little enthusiasm, and in the 10 years since Vatican II, their whole lives had shifted. They were eating differently, they had changed their prayer practices, everything was being done differently. Dr. Tomatis, who was an ear, nose, and throat specialist, had the curious sense that what was wrong was not physiological, but audiological. He told the abbot he would like to put them back on a full, clear, refined diet of Gregorian chant. Those long phrases that in the past the whole community would sit and chant together 8 or 9 times a day from 10 to 25 minutes would evoke a resonant field of release that would allow a physical, mental, and emotional focus that brought together the monastery as a group field into harmony and resonance. Well, within 6 months of the use again of this chant, the monastery was intact again. The monks needed much less sleep. They went back to their previous practices, and a whole new world opened up for them. The new world was the old world. It is the old world of sound and voice that has been the healing agent of many societies throughout the earth. And so that we can have some experience of this, I've brought my harp, because its music is made with vibration. And science is telling us now that the whole universe is vibrating, including our bodies. And we know how one vibration can set off another. So I'd like to try this simple chant. It comes from the Middle East, actually from Dr. Neil Douglas Klotz, the noted Aramaic scholar, the language that Jesus spoke. But we will use the English words, which will be up on the screen for you. We're going to introduce it, and then, closing your eyes and without any concern for the quality of the sound, you can try joining in, and we'll see where it takes us. Think of it as a focused intention of your own, making the words your own and the sound of your own. Maybe I'll play it through once. Hmm?
Holy One, awaken us.
Can tell in our bodies that this is a deeply centering and ordering practice. Catherine LeMay, an authority on chant who's being consulted by the Vatican, has written this: the effect of chant is to balance mind, emotions, and body. Singing or simply actively listening to chant with directed attention, we feel whole and part of a greater whole. It is precisely this integrating tendency that constitutes healing.
So take a moment now, sensing what you feel within your bodies, and think of the fields of energy and information that surround you personally. See if you can identify some circumstances or attitudes that invisibly support your wellness, as chanting supported the life of the French monks. Take a moment and think what it is that supports you and that you can pull more of it into your life, maybe nature, perhaps music. Good tea. Identifying these subtle support systems, remember, just turning awareness to them activates them and brings them forward. Thomas Merton wrote, "We have what we seek. It is there all the time. And if we slow down and be still, it will make itself known to us."
One more quote. There was a maxim in ancient Egyptian spirituality that one grows the field of one's spiritual being most by engaging in what one most loves to do. Wonderful thought. And now here's Candace to share her story on how the process of healing occurs.
When Patricia asked me to give a story about our connection to healing, I remembered something. Is it a little closer? Is that better? All right. I remembered a story I hadn't remembered in years. My mother said that we came from a long line of spiritual Scottish women with second sight. We were both, my mother and I, sensitive to nature and nature spirits, and we both saw energy and colors around trees. And around trees and flowers. She said that when I was 7 or 8 years old and she took me to the grocery store, I would sometimes go up to strangers and put my hands on them, always in a place where they hurt or were in pain. She was obviously embarrassed by her daughter, but I don't remember anyone being upset by it. They were surprised, but a little 7-year-old blonde Muppet coming up to them didn't seem to be upsetting to them at all. I was drawn to God from a really young age. I had dreams about Jesus, and my mother and father, being Methodists, had never really talked to me much about Jesus. I don't know if that's a misnomer, but he would teach me in the dreams, and I felt very comfortable with him, and I felt he was an older brother, which I had an older brother, so that was nice. At 13, I found a Roman Catholic missal on the sidewalk coming home from school. I read it, and I was so drawn to the Latin and the red words that I studied it and decided I would say the Mass in Latin. I don't know that anyone would recognize the Latin, but I would say it. And the closest church to me was Our Lady of Peace Catholic Church. And so I would walk down sometimes at night with my parents not knowing, and I would say the Mass in Latin in the church. The words were so old to me and comfortable, like I knew them. And I set up an altar in my room with a picture of Jesus and flowers and this kind of thing. My brother knew I was weird anyway. And my Midwest parents had no idea what to do with me, really. The hunger for spirit was so enormous that I studied everything I could get my hands on. So on one side, it was metaphysics and astrology and tarot and all of those things. And on the other side, it was a deep immersion into Jesus, into contemplative prayer, into meditation, and into going on retreats. Maybe because Jesus came to me so young and as my brother, it didn't bother me that I studied everything from every tradition, because Jesus was my center. So I was on a retreat one time, and the director asked all of us to say a single sentence about who we were. And I found myself surprised when I said, "I am a bridge person. I love traveling between the worlds." And I realized that's still true for me. I studied with many gifted people, as you heard a few of them, and I've been blessed by them all. I know now that we are all born with gifts, whether in art or music, making a garden, beautiful home, whatever. But I believe that most people can be trained to some degree. And it certainly includes being trained in energy perception and becoming a vehicle for this resonant, loving energy to flow through us. In 93, I took a class from Janet Menken. You've heard about her a little. It was a nursing-based curriculum of energy healing. It was the first curriculum she created. Then Healing Touch Spiritual Ministry came second. I was attracted to her because I have a healthy skeptic in me and a devout believer, and she wanted to make energy healing acceptable within traditional medicine and not considered so woo-woo. And although Reiki and Theta healing and Pranic healing and many other healing traditions use this resonant energy, it is the only healing energy there is, certified Healing Touch practitioners are the only energy workers allowed in U.S. operating rooms without being a nurse or a doctor. So I have worked in many departments in the hospitals. So, Janet Menken had a vision of integrating this, and she did it in 10 years. It was a vision of God, and she manifested it. It was wonderful. So this leads me to my portion, which I'd like to talk about, how a healing session occurs, both from the practitioner point of view and from the receiver's point of view. Dr. Andrew Frankel of Stanford University, who was the co-founder of the prayer on brain tumors that I was part of, said that they had done at least 5 years of research and found that there were three vital elements in an effective healer, quote unquote. Intention. Their intention to be a channel of God or spirit's energy and healing. Their focus, to be able to go into deep stillness and hold steady in that heart coherence within a deep state of ease. And the last, he said, was the most important, which was experience and practice. It is only through practice you can develop the ability to reside within that coherence and stillness for long periods of time. From the receiver's point of view, Janet Mencken said the effectiveness of healing for her patients was in direct connection to their setting a clear intention. It made them automatically aware not only of their body, mind, and spirit, but it made them responsible and active in their own healing. So she always gave homework. There was always homework for the receiver. They didn't just receive, they had to work with something. The second part is will. We could talk a lot about it, but basically it's energizing our intention or our need to make it clear to ourselves. And the third is release. Just like experience and practice for the practitioner was important, release, which means giving it into God's care and releasing it and letting it stay there, is vital for the receiver. So when someone comes for a healing touch session, this is the longer form, and we're going to experience the shorter form a little later. I wanted to take you through what we do. Obviously, I'm using the words healer and receiver. The healer asks a few questions of the receiver and asks them about their physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual levels. By spiritual levels, sometimes you use the words, how is your connection to spirit or God? The answers are not only important for me or whoever the healer is, but even more important for the person who's receiving. I can't tell you the number of times people have said, oh, I did have that dream, I forgot about it, or I wasn't aware that I really wanted this particular thing. Then the healer asks, what's your intention? What do you need right now? I have answers that are in the thousands. Some of them are, I want more energy. I want to relax. I want less pain. I want to feel my connection to God more. The healer assesses the energy field with both a pendulum, which works on energy centers, and with our hands about 3 or 4 inches above the body. The healer then asks both of us, to breathe together about 3 or 5 times, and then says a prayer. Usually the prayer is out loud. The healer, through practice, has learned to move into a state of coherence and heart openness and stillness. There are hand placements. Some of them are simply on the shoulders. Some are over energy centers of the body. When holding in this stillness, this vital energy brings balance. It can increase energy. It can calm a person. It can decrease pain. We don't know what will happen. But it's always something that's related to the intention of the receiver. And there's always an extra gift. That's what I found. The active part of the session is about 30 minutes to 40 minutes. Some clients are so relaxed or they fall asleep. And so they may need to stay in their chair or the table for 5 or 10 minutes. When finished, we give them water to drink. It actually breaks a certain energetic connection and helps ground them. And we wait and bring them back into an alert state so that they can drive and walk. For the practitioner, this movement into deep stillness, where the heart expands and the mind recedes, is essential. Deep rhythmic breathing and relaxing. I can't tell you how many clients I've had where I said, we're going to do 3 deep breaths. And they say, okay. And then I look at them and I go, and they watch me, but they don't breathe. So I have to remind them, no, you're to breathe also. Doc Childre calls this the state of ease. When we've moved into this heart connection and stillness, we turn our attention to the heart and simply stay in the flow of connection, holding in a flexible way. I liken it to swaying to music. It's not like you're stagnant and holding in a stiff way. You're just moving with the resonance, this energy. You just stay with it. The healing, which can be on many levels, is an innate quality of this resonant heart energy. this state of ease energy. There's an innate intelligence to this state, and it moves to all what I call the low places in the body, mind, and field of the person. The healer simply holds this field of resonance and stillness, or, as Pat said, holds the cord of connection. Information will download and give accurate and essential answers or solutions with stunning accuracy. Doc Childre calls it implicit knowledge and non-local intuition. I call it surprising information and intuition. Often this information makes no sense to the healer, such as Catherine referred to in some of her experiences last week. Here's my story of one of my clients and the download that made no sense to me. My client was a professional psychologist with intestinal cancer. She knew herself well, was intelligent, compassionate, and aware, and had a deep spiritual practice. After balancing her energy centers, I was working on the tumors in her pelvis. As I kept the focus with deep breathing, the energy and heat intensified radically. Suddenly a song came into my head. It was a crazy, inappropriate, and outrageous song. However, in my life, like in Catherine's, I have learned the earmarks of spirit when it downloads wisdom or information that is absolutely necessary. I feel it as either a fire in my belly or a fire in my heart, and it becomes so uncomfortable I have to speak it. I really didn't want to sing this song. I told my client that I had to sing the song, and she said, go ahead. Ding dong, the witch is dead. Witch, old witch, the wicked witch. Ding dong, the cancer witch is dead. By the middle of the song, she was weeping and shaking. She continued for 5 minutes. I really hoped I hadn't made her worse. Then she told me why. The previous week, the UCSF radio station had had a program where they unpacked the metaphors of the Wizard of Oz. The segments on the Wicked Witch of the West she saw as her disease. And she had been singing the ditty every day, several times a day, the whole last week. When I sang it and changed the words, she experienced profound healing and a reduction in pain. We are not the judge of the information our heart gives. And we have to be courageous and willing and vulnerable to share it. So let's move into an exercise and experience both coherent breathing and resonant healing with each other. The first part is individual, and the second part you will need a partner. So if you don't have a partner within your row that you could simply turn towards each other, then raise your hand and we'll find a partner for you.
Find your partners now.
Anybody not have a partner? Right here, there's a man there, man there, one there.
Okay, stand up to see where the other hands are raised and find each other and get together.
So, that woman right there, right here in front. With the man right here in black. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. We all found our partners?
Yep. Everyone have a partner? Up.
One more hand.
One more hand. You need a partner? And in back.
Yeah.
Jackie, there's a woman right there.
Right behind you.
Why doesn't she, either you go back to her or she come forward to you? Okay. So the first part of this will be individual. We're sitting in our chairs, legs and arms uncrossed, feet on the ground. We will practice a breathing model of five in and five out, breathing into the count of five, which I will lead you in, and out to the count of five. We'll do this for approximately 1 to 2 minutes. We'll just see how it goes. At the end, I will ring a bowl. Then, not the big salad bowl, but the smaller bowl. Then each of you will turn to your partner. And in the second part, you will clasp your right hands together like shaking hands, resting them in your lap, while your left hand, so one partner's left hand will be able to easily be on the other person's shoulder. The other person, it doesn't work the other way. You'll have to just put your hand on their arm. We will again close our eyes and do the breathing exercise of five in and five out for again a minute or 2 minutes. At the end of that time, I will ring the little bowl again, and you'll open your eyes and look into the eyes of each other, and we'll hold that for about a minute, and I'll ring the bowl again. This is one of the short forms that we use sometimes in our churches between our services. Okay. Everyone ready? Close your eyes, uncross your legs. So let's breathe in to the count of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Hold a bit. Out. 2, 3, 4, 5. Hold. In. 2, 3, 4, 5. Out. 2, 3, 4, 5. In. 3, 4, 5. Out. 2, 3, 4, 5. In. 2, 3, 4, 5. Out. 2, 3, 4, 5. In. 2, 3, 4, 5. Out. 2, 3, 4, 5. In. 2, 3, 4, 5. Out. 2, 3, 4, 5. In. 2, 3, 4, 5. Out. 2, 3, 4, 5. In. 2, 3, 4, 5. Out. 2, 3, 4, 5. So turn to your partner in gently way. And you're going to clasp your right hands like you're shaking hands. Clasp your right hands like you're shaking hands. And then if it's comfortable, put the other hand on their shoulder or on their arm, whichever doesn't strain you. Okay? So start breathing in. 2, 3, 4, 5. Out. 2, 3, 4, 5. In. 2, 3, 4, 5. Out. 2, 3, 4, 5. In. 5. Out. In.
Open your eyes, keep your position, and we'll breathe for another minute together. In. So gently disengage now. Gently, because there's a little bond, a little energy that has, you can feel it. Without a word, with only proximity, rhythmic breathing, above all, awareness. Remember, Candace Pert says, simply becoming aware of your breath begins to bring up this whole consciousness that links your bodies. Many of you are pastoral visitors, I think, in this group. There is no better thing to do than this in a pastoral visit. When we put our hand up here on the brachial nerve, which is this big feed between your heart and your brain, you're touching that with this synchronous coherence that simply breathing together begins to offer. And when you do that, and very often the receiver may also want to just touch their hearts, just that and the intention of blessing, just the intention of blessing. We're not talking about curing here. We're not talking about fixing. We're talking about making that flow place between us where the power of God is always moving to make things whole, to make them healthy, to bring them back into order. In these instances, we are doing it for each other. It doesn't take any studies. It just takes intention, openness, and coherence. So this is the introduction. This is the territory of what spiritual healing looks like, where it happens. After our break, we're going to come back and hear a little bit more about the specifics of this project. It's a little history, a couple of stories that are down home, right here in Santa Barbara, that have happened at Trinity and at All Saints. We'll run another exercise, a shorter exercise for you, and then we'll have plenty of time for questions and answers. But meanwhile, come and talk to these good people over intermission, and we'll see you in 20 minutes. Thank you.